The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners, Craig Konstantinovich and Cole Hammack. It's the dream team again.
Yeah.
We have on deck. Nice
good
to
run.
See you guys.
Welcome back.
All right, I'm going to try to throw you some curveballs today. We're going to get into the Social Security playbook. Most people think Social Security is just something you turn on when you retire. I'm personally that person. You know,
sure.
I think about, okay, I don't have to think about it until X time frame of my life, which I've learned by working here is not the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
For high income earners, it's way more than that. And I'm learning it's a tool. So I want you guys to talk more about that. If you use it right, it can seriously shape your bigger financial picture. So heading into some of the discussion points, you know, starting, I think, with, you know, blended families. Many people have blended families, and these can be really complicated when it comes to financial planning, and especially when, you know, when Social Security is on deck. So let's run through some of the things to put on people's radar relative to blended families and maybe even ex-spouse benefits.
Not all at once, right?
Hopefully not.
All right. So I guess a little bit more clearly, just so I can make sure I go down the right avenue. So we're talking about a blended family, so maybe a second marriage, maybe there's multiple kids. That's kind of the picture
yes.
that we're looking at here.
Yes.
Okay. When it comes to the Social Security and when it comes to potential benefits that are out there, there's usually two ways that prominent figures are factored in. It's either your earnings history or how much you've paid into Social Security or your spouse's earnings history and what they've paid into Social Security. So when you're talking about these scenarios here, there's a lot of if this, then that, a lot of potentially here's this or here's that. But if we're really looking at it here, as soon as you remarry, any of the previous spouse's earnings history, null and void, doesn't matter. It's not going to be factored in. It's not applicable to what your potential Social Security benefits are. You have to be married for at least 10 years to get at least 50% of your spouse's Social Security benefits. If your benefit is greater, you're not going to get anything from the spousal benefit side of things. So that's just one piece to kind of be mindful of here. So as you're looking at that and as you're starting to evaluate, okay, I'm nearing 62 or 67 or 70. Those are usually the magic ages. We'll talk about that further, I'm sure. But as you start to near those ages, the question becomes, how do I go about filing for benefits? And that's where you got to check and make sure, okay, well, hey, first box, have we been married for at least 10 years? If the answer is no, then it's just going to be based off of your earnings history. No questions, nothing that you need to worry about there. If the answer is yes, then you need to start to speak to Social Security and evaluate, okay, how does this compare what my benefit would be, what your benefit would be, what my benefit could be, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess to add to that, so you painted the picture of the family, mm-hmm. the new family, but kind of on the outside then, that ex-spouse, right? So say the idea is you got divorced, one entity remarries, but the other, maybe they never did. Correct to your point, you referenced the 10-year rule. So if you were married to your ex-spouse for 10 years, never remarried, you're still eligible to claim up to 50% of their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll want to work through Social Security for that, figure out the numbers. You don't generally have to align with your ex-spouse to figure that out because some people have that question. Fortunately, that's not a point of contention
mm-hmm.
there. And then to go a step further, thinking that worst-case scenario is something happens to one of your spouses, because that expands that benefit aspect as well. So there's a death benefit to Social Security. So fortunately for that one, there's no 10-year timer for that.
Mm-hmm.
So spouse passes. As the surviving spouse, you're eligible at age 62. to qualify for Social Security benefits based off of their benefit. But if you have minor children and they set the bar at age 16, you can also qualify as a caregiver, basically, for Social Security. And your dependents can even qualify for Social Security. But where we're going with the blended family piece, the dependent piece has to be your biological children or adopted children.
Is that in tandem with the benefit you're getting already or instead of?
So that would be in tandem with the benefit that the spouse is receiving, right? Children are also entitled to a benefit, but there are very particular rules surrounding that as well.
So when I was researching this topic, something jumped out, and in my interpretation, I want to clarify my own interpretation of this by asking you. So is there an impact of remarriage after 60 when you're either taking or getting ready to start taking Social Security?
Yeah, absolutely, there can be. So going back to Craig's point, the idea being that they're going to look at your benefit first.
Okay.
Right, so what benefit are you bringing to the table? But, and I'd like to double check this one, but I don't know on the marriage side that there's that same 10-year requirement. I think that may just be for ex-spouses. So if that's the case, that would allow for you to qualify for that spousal benefit if you wouldn't otherwise have either your own benefit or meet that 50% requirement of the new spouse.
Okay. Part of the intricacies, I think, of this topic is when we're talking about unique situations and when you have a client spouse situation where there's an age gap, substantial age gap. I have some in my family where I wondered how that worked, if there's a 15-year age gap between the client and spouse.
Yeah, we see it.
How does that impact the Social Security strategies in the household?
There's a lot that goes into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything from when does retirement or financial independence happen to do you work just so you can accumulate benefits? I mean, again, we've worked with any number of people that fit that criteria, and some people come with absolutely no earnings history. They're business owners. They decide, hey, we want to start making them eligible for an additional Social Security benefit. How do you do that? Well, it's very not counterintuitive because once you hear it, it makes sense, but it's not maybe intuitive as in the form of, well, you pay taxes. If you're going to be that business owner, if you're going to have this spouse become eligible for Social Security benefits just on their own merits, they've got to pay into the system. They've got to get their 40 working quarters or 10 calendar years of working in order to qualify for a Social Security benefit. So how do you do that? You pay them a wage. You pay them in, or you have them pay into Social Security. That helps them accrue that benefit. But not everyone has that luxury. Not everyone is a business owner. So what else can you do? Well, there may not be that same kind of robust thing, but the same idea applies. Maybe they go out and they find a job where they can contribute to Social Security and still get that benefit. There's those kind of nuances. But then the other piece, like Cole was talking about, now it really comes down to filing status. When do people start to file to begin collecting Social Security? Because the way that it works is, widowers benefit separate. If we're just truly talking about, I want to go out and get my Social Security benefit, you right now, most people at this point in time, if you're not already collecting Social Security, your full retirement age is age 67. If you take your benefit before age 67, you are entitled to a reduced benefit for the remainder of your lifetime. Now that becomes important because if you elect that,
and I like how you say that you're entitled to.
Exactly. You're entitled to.
Your benefit, right?
But that could have an impact then on what your potential spouse's benefit could be because you elected to take that benefit early. It's reduced not only for your lifetime, but now they've got 50% less that they could be entitled to.
This is a math problem. So that was actually my next question. Should the older spouse hold off so that the younger one has more to live on later? So
potentially.
That's the strategy, I guess, right?
Yeah. Potentially. About. It's one of those things where, unfortunately, you have to play the guessing game of what's my life expectancy on both sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. And no one has that perfect crystal ball.
Yeah. And even to, like, say they earn $40,000, $50,000 a year every year, but the younger spouse is a high-income earner executive at a company, it maybe doesn't make sense to defer until 70 because, realistically, the younger spouse will have their own benefit by the time they get to that point. But if they've worked a high-earning executive job for the better part of the last 30, 40 years, deferring until 70 could be a very good strategy for a lot of reasons. I think we'll get into some of those strategies here too.
Okay, I'm going to jump ahead because this is a great segue to the next, to one of the next points. So for spouses who never worked in the business or in business period, you know, stay-at-home caregivers, and I can relate to this, having spent a, you know, a decent amount of my life as a caregiver for kids and parents, you know, you're kind of behind the eight ball financially in every aspect. So you have to be creative and patient and willing to prioritize what's, you know, what matters to your family. But that comes at a price, right? Especially when you're dealing with Social Security. So is there a situation where a stay-at-home spouse might be leaving money on the table without realizing it?
I mean, might be, but it just comes down to the trade-off, right? If that's the family's priority, right, having someone there for the kids or having someone there for aging parents, that's probably worth every penny.
That sounds emotional, not logistical.
Yeah. I think a lot more goes into that than just the financial piece, for sure.
Social Security is a great piece. I mean, you can look up any number of statistics, but it is one of the largest contributor to Americans' household income in retirement. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So that's why, arguably, they make it as complex as they do, because they don't want to overpay benefits. But you also have these instances where, like what we just had happen earlier this year with the Social Security Fairness Act, where those people that worked in the government sector or for public companies or government agencies, rather, that were entitled to a pension benefit, but they also met criteria to receive spousal benefits, or maybe they didn't spend their entire life working in that position, so they contributed enough to Social Security to qualify and to get that pension. Well, they were actually penalized. There were different provisions within Social Security that this Fairness Act, as it's aptly called, removed and said, why, we're not going to penalize people for being diverse in their work experience. We're going to now allow them to get more benefit, and rightfully so. And Social Security goes through changes constantly. There's been different changes that have been made to filing methods, to strategies. You know, there's been a lot of things that haven't been touched in a good long time, like the full retirement age, for instance. So this is a robust system. There are a lot of if this, then that scenarios, and you're bringing up a lot of great cases, Casey Tracy. Look at that.
I've been called worse. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. But
given
where we're at, I mean, that's where to understand what your benefits are early on, to look at your earnings history regularly. That is one of the biggest things where most of the time when we tell people, hey, we need a Social Security statement, they say, where do I go to get it? How do I find that information? And if you're not checking that, there may be some money that's left on the table.
And just to add to that, it's ssa.gov.
There you go.
Very
awesome.
Easy to find. Make sure you set up your access to that.
This topic I'm reading, this topic point, because it's way outside of my milieu. So talking about business owners, and low reported income. So, explain what that means. You know, is saving on taxes today worth missing out on thousands later? I mean, what does that look like?
Yeah, so just strictly what it means is basically running up expenses for the sake of showing expenses. That way you're limiting profit reported. By way of limiting profit, you're limiting what you're actually paying into Social Security, because it's a percentage of that. So the idea being is if you do that regularly, you, generally speaking, are shortchanging yourself or presumably shortchanging yourself long-term from a Social Security standpoint. So the idea is if someone who's earning a maximum benefit every year that's paid into Social Security, so there's a wage base to it this year, something like $170,000, you're hitting that year in and year out, you can reasonably predict about $50,000 per year from Social Security at this point.
Yeah.
So the idea is if we're leaving a lot of money on the table, that's what we're giving up for the 25 odd years that we may live after qualifying for Social Security. So it can be substantial, honestly.
So to Cole's point then, let's say as a business owner, instead of contributing 170, we only pay in 100,000. And we do that for 5 consecutive years, 10 consecutive years, and we don't really move that needle. Now, all of a sudden, instead of getting 50, we may get $35,000 per year from Social Security. Mm-hmm. We may get $30,000. And let's say, God forbid, we file early at age 62. Well, now that 30 may go down to $24,000 per year. So you can really compound the impact of it. And now, you know, again, a lot of accountants, rightfully so, They say, hey, here's what your projected tax bill is going to be as a business owner. And most business owners scoff and they say, I don't want to pay that. So then the accountant has to react and say, okay, well, we have to find other ways that we can reduce your profitability in the business.
And you're a hammer, right?
So that's where, as we always say, we want to work with accountants because accountants' purview, their goal is every previous year for your income to be essentially zero or your tax bill to be zero. Whereas us as planners, we're trying to look forward and say, well, yeah, it may be nice to avoid paying a $10,000 tax bill this one year because you had, rightfully so, expenses that could be claimed. But here's what the consequence of doing that is. Mm-hmm. It's reducing your Social Security benefit $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 per year. You compound that over a lifetime from retirement or from 67 until hopefully age 97, that's 30 years of lost benefit. Mm-hmm. Was it really worth it to save that 10 grand in taxes?
Yeah.
Thank you for that context. I think people will appreciate that visual. Can people use Social Security timing to keep their taxes low? I mean, we talk a lot about the taxation part of Social Security. So kind of let's walk people through what that looks like and if it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, in short, when you take Social Security, you're paying taxes on Social Security. How much comes down to what your other income sources look like. So the idea is if we defer Social Security, we're not paying taxes on it, meaning that may create other opportunities for us to do things in between time in terms of negotiating that actual tax bill.
And to boot with that as well, like for instance, just to give even more of a specific example, let's say you're still working your regular job that you had been at for 30 years and you're 65 years old and you just absolutely love getting up every single morning, going to work, still earning $100,000, $150,000, $200,000. Well, I'm 65. I'm eligible for Social Security. Why don't I turn Social Security on? Mm-hmm. Well, you're still paying into the system at that point in time. You've got, hopefully, enough from your income that you don't need to file for that benefit. So to Cole's point, if we don't trigger Social Security to be on right then and there, and let's say we wait and we have our savings, we have our investments, we have everything else, maybe we can wait a few years, retire from that job, then elect our Social Security benefits, and now all of a sudden we're keeping more of what we're getting in our pockets.
And that's the game, everybody, at least in my network, we talk about this all the time, that chess game. When is it? And I know it's case by case, but when is the perfect moment to kind of that sweet spot to turn it on and start taking distributions?
Because I want to expand on Craig's point, too, because there are some pretty nasty penalties if you take Social Security before your full retirement age, because Craig had referenced 67 is the earliest you can take it without an unreduced benefit. So part of that reduction looks like for every $2 that you earn, you lose $1 of Social Security benefit prior to your full retirement age. It would be the most aggressive. I think for income at a lower level, it's you lose $1 for every $3 you earn. But the threshold's fairly low, so you can really eat into that Social Security benefit during your working years if you're not thinking about it.
That means I get to stick around for a while.
There you go.
I hope you do.
You're going to be stuck with me for a while. Okay.
What, like another 30 years?
Yeah,
is that
right.
Did I do it right?
Yeah, if only I feel that way.
There you go.
Till I stand next to you and then I go, oh, yeah.
Well, then you feel short because I'm just, that's the only difference, right?
You're right. Okay, we talk a lot about estate planning at our office, and I'm curious to see what your take is as far as incorporating Social Security as well as protecting a surviving spouse into estate planning.
So from the estate planning perspective, it varies based off of what people are trying to do, accomplish, those kind of things. So when I hear that, my mind immediately jumps to, okay, Social Security is an income stream. If we have expenses, if we have other things that we're incurring without having an income stream available, then we have to take money from our investments. Depending on age, depending on a multitude of factors, now all of a sudden it may be more prudent for us to say, okay, let me file for Social Security so I can have an income stream to help offset my expenses. And the theory behind that would be, that means that I now have a lesser withdrawal rate from my investments, so there should be a bigger pot that's available for my heirs. So that's how it can be incorporated. I don't know if you think of it differently, Cole.
I was going to say, it's a big part of our conversation, really, when it comes to like the life insurance piece, which in part is kind of an extension of estate planning, right? One of the spouses pass, what do we really need to plan for? And the idea with Social Security is if one spouse passes, the surviving spouse keeps the higher benefit. It's no longer that joint benefit that maybe you've always planned for. So from that life insurance perspective, we need to say, okay, well, if one of these goes away, what do we really need to replace that? So that's part of that longer term planning.
I'm envisioning, you know, physicians, attorneys, certified financial planners, executives, you know, business owners. Is there any sort of scenario where that would be different for somebody who's got a business or multiple businesses? Is the approach, you know, super different, or is it basically succession planning?
It's succession planning. Yeah. The biggest thing, obviously, the more assets you have, the more opportunity you have to preserve certain things. But also, I would argue that more times than not, that also means you've got a more robust lifestyle. So naturally, your withdrawal rate is going to be greater because you're not, again, to Cole's point, Social Security maxing out at $50,000 for those, you know, descriptors that you used, $100,000 household-wise of income, if both spouses are bringing that in, you know, they may have a lifestyle of $300,000. So, yeah, that takes a third of it away that they don't need to worry about, but they still have those two-thirds that are coming in. But when you have a business, you also have expenses that are associated with it. You have other things. So it may not be your lifestyle. It may be the business needs at that point. So you may still need to tap into your investments. So there's a lot that goes in, and we've talked in a number of shows about, you know, succession planning and estate planning, now Social Security being a part of it. Whenever you are engaging in a business, or if that is something that's out there, you have any of those closely held assets, one of the best things to do is think about what's your end game. How do you get out at that point? Because that can help kind of craft these strategies and make, you know, should I file for Social Security at 67 versus 70? That sometimes can make the decision very obvious.
Now, you touched on this earlier. I just want to confirm. So if somebody's divorced either before or while they're taking Social Security payments, and I'm recalling this many years ago, someone close to me was able to choose between their former spouse and their current spouse's payments. We've covered that. There's nothing else you want to touch on?
Yeah, I would just question maybe choosing between a current spouse and a former spouse, just generally speaking. And maybe it's changed, but the idea is if you remarried, it is current spouse or your own benefit,
so
essentially,
that's
whichever's.
Gone. That doesn't exist anymore then?
Correct.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And if Social Security isn't tough enough for most of us to navigate without the help of these genius people sitting next to me, when you combine Medicare with it, my brain just wants to kind of go
right
to sleep.
Right there with you, Tracy. You're not alone.
I won't say what it wants to do. But so will starting Social Security now bump somebody into a higher Medicare premium?
Yeah, it certainly could. So Medicare is very much income-based, right? So there's the income-related monthly adjustment amount. That's the IRMA, maybe that you're familiar with, IRMAA. So as your income increases, once we cross certain thresholds, the premiums that they charge, I believe, for your Part B and your Part D of Medicare, there's going to be a surcharge tied to that. So if your Social Security income is going to push you over those brackets, so if we don't adjust our other pieces or we're just not able to, then we will certainly be looking at those surcharges.
How do people do the math? How do you do that
tax
math?
Tax returns.
I was going to say work with an accountant.
Yep. Okay. You got to look at your numbers. You got to know your numbers. Working with an accountant is a great place.
Definitely. Yeah, because it's all based off of your modified adjusted gross income.
Yep.
And everyone looks at that and says, huh? There's no line item on your tax return that clearly identifies that. A lot of people will confuse your adjusted gross income. The modified part of it means that some of your expenses are added back in. Mm-hmm. So that's where, again, do you work with an accountant to figure that out? That's the best route.
Or a CFP. Or both, right?
We'll still point you toward a CPA.
Yeah. Well, this has been really helpful. I know for me, I hope it's been helpful for our listeners. So as we end today's conversation, think of Social Security as a full strategy, not just a check like many of us do.
Well said.
Thanks. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in, and don't forget to share with your friends. We'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a one-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.